tell you the truth. I'm a little confused by your tactics.
Welcome back, coaches, to the Talking Split podcast. I am Rob Calder once again, joined this week by the ever punctual Nathan Cooper Brown. Welcome, Coops.
Good to see you, Robbie.
And the frequently borderline Darren Best.
My head's a pretzel. Well done on the intro.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Back again with the Talking Split podcast. You can follow along on Instagram and X using the handle at Talking Split. Just a reminder, if you can like, share, subscribe, and leave a rating and review, just like Uber's, 5 stars only, unless they put the meal right up against the door and you got to try and open the screen door. No good. 1 star for those reviews. But we don't do that. We are starting to get a little bit more content up on the Talking Split socials, so some drills, some interviews with players, coaches, those types of things. So if you can have a little bit of a look out for that, including a drill that I said I'd film about 2.5 months ago that I forgot to film, that will be going up over the next week and a half or so. So I'll get to that. We'll start off straight away with coach shout-outs.
You know you make me want to have my cold chairs.
Coach shout out for this week, Braithen Kerr from the Frankston under 12 girls. So Braithen's been a great coach, leader and mentor for the girls this season, finding a great balance of keeping the players accountable and teaching, but also making it a safe environment for them all to trial and error. Despite being a young coach, he's very professional with the players and always looks to improve himself and them. And I had Braithen in a course not too long ago, actually, and really enjoyed his insights and input into that sort of stuff on that side. So I know he's done some BV stuff along the way as well, and he's always been fairly well reviewed from anyone and everyone that sort of comes across him. So good job, Braithen. Bestie, back from China. Talk to us. How did it go? What was it? What did you take away?
Yeah, first of all, really good, but probably need to do a little bit of background around how it came about. BA and B China, I guess, if that's what you call it, have created an MOU to try and grow the game, and that involves, you know, some junior games, some senior games, as we saw with the Boomers and Opals earlier, and there's also some stuff around technical officials, but I don't really know much about that. In conjunction with Yao Ming and the Shanghai Sharks, they host a tournament called the Rising Stars, and it's been going for a couple of years, but based on this new MOU, Australia was invited to enter a team into this. So BA made the decision that the winning state from the under-18 national championships could enter a team to go.
Did you guys know that before the tournament?
No.
Yeah, after the fact. Yeah,
no, we did not.
And it's a world of pressure going into a nationals as well, if you've known about it.
Yeah, and it evolved and changed as it was all happening. So originally it was going to be, you know, 20-odd tickets and, you know, because they paid for everything. So originally there was going to be a larger group of people that could go, and then it changed, you know, budgets and all, you know, all that stuff. Sometimes it changes. Because it became a BA team, there also was that some other requirements. We had to take a doctor and those types of things. So the staffing, unfortunately, couldn't go on that tour unless we were going to reduce the number of players that went. We didn't want to do that. So Grant and I went as coaches / team managers, and then we had a physio and a team doctor as well, which were great. So the tournament in Shanghai, you know, I'd never been to China before. I've heard, obviously, Shanghai is very different to the rest of China, but that city was beautiful. It was really clean, lots of trees, lots of, you know, just greenery everywhere. 80-odd percent of the vehicles, maybe even higher, were electric, so there was hardly any air pollution. You know, I could live there. You know, the urban sprawl, massive, you know, 30 million people. Everyone was largely friendly. You know, I think partly it's because we were traveling as a group and we were a team, and, you know, there was the kids experienced, like, hysteria a little bit, you know, at the games and even at the hotel. There was people waiting at the hotel with pictures of our kids wanting signatures and, like, you know, all this wanting photos and all of that. So
any with you?
Yeah, that was, yeah. And Grant as well. Like, it was, and even we were sitting there trying to scout a game and, like, kids coming up to us wanting photos and signatures. And it's just, you know, I'm sure you've probably experienced some of that too, Coops, with your international stuff. But so the tournament, we started playing at the FIBA House of Basketball in downtown Shanghai, which, you kind of turn up to this building downtown, you walk in, and it looks honestly like a hotel. And we go up probably 4 or 5 flights of elevators escalators, and then you walk into this massive cafeteria type area, and then it goes out into three courts in one pod and another three courts in another pod, and then out the back is this huge badminton sort of area. So we're on like level 5 or 6 or something, I don't know, and big grandstand, huge electronic scoreboard, as you can imagine, all of that. So the pool games were played there and at a local high school, and then if you made the top four, you went to the Shanghai Sharks Arena. So that was really our goal, to just try and get to that arena so those kids could experience that, whatever. So first game we played against Utah Prep, who are currently the number one ranked prep school in America. A couple of kids from the under-17 World Cup gold medal winning team. One guy, AJ DeBassa, who is the projected number one pick for the NBA in his age group. So we played them sort of sight unseen first game. Lost by 12, which, you know, we really wanted to play him again because we felt we could have got him with some scouting. Look, they may have felt the same. Don't know. So we lose to them by 12. Good effort, good showing. And then we played this team from Serbia. We had some video on them. We got to practice and scout them. Handled them pretty comfortably. It was 20 plus, I think. And then that set up the last pool game against the Shanghai Sharks Youth Academy team. So top two in our pool go through. Shanghai Sharks Youth Academy only just lost to Utah Prep by, I want to say, less than 8, I think. So it was going to be tough for us. And then during the scouting, we find that they have some players that are 4 years older than our boys, right? Yep. And look, to be fair, there was some restrictions on how long they were allowed to play for.
Okay, yeah, is in like minutes in game type
stuff?
Yeah,
yeah. I think they were all allowed to play 15 minutes. And don't get me wrong, they were all on at the end of the game, you know, like, and as you would, yeah, right?
For sure.
But we beat them, and actually we ended up beating them by nearly 30. So I'm not sure if they could have played their full whack anyway.
Yep.
And then that set up, so we moved to the Shanghai Sharks Arena, which is, you know, it's comparable or bigger than Rod Laver. You know, it seats about 17 or 18,000. Big, you know, Jumbotron and all that type of stuff. So the boys got to do the locker room thing and all of that, and shoot around, and all that was cool. But we played the Chinese, I guess the Emus equivalent, national team in that semi-final. So, pardon me, you know, you're comparing a national team 2 years older of 1.5 billion people to a state team 2 years younger of like 5 million people, and arguably not our best state team either, because there were some kids that didn't go. Right. So we're playing in front of, you know, the lower bowl was pretty full. They said it was about 5,000 people. You know, the full, you know, all the cheerleaders, you know, media timeouts, you know, we could challenge and review players, all of that stuff.
That would not be healthy for me as a coach, I've got to tell you.
Well, I actually, like, during one of the challenges, I actually tried to walk behind the bench to see the replay, and they were, like, pushing me out of the way. Yeah, yeah. But we actually get it to overtime. So Marcus Vaughns gets an and-one play, which, you know, surprising to get that. And hits the foul shot, goes to overtime, and we lose by 4 to them, which is just phenomenal effort. Like, the boys just, you know, they had multiple guys that were 220 centimetres tall, you know, and it's their national team. Once I told you all the numbers before. So to do that, awesome. We then obviously go to play off for bronze, and we do that against the Canadian composite team, which is sort of similar to what ours was. And, yeah, we ended up beating them by about 15. And there was, yeah, similar sort of level crowd. However, it was building towards the end of the game, because then China's national team was going to play against Utah Prep, and Utah Prep smacked them in the end. But just an unreal experience for those kids, you know, to experience international play. I know some of them have done that through green and gold FIBA stuff, but this was maybe a little bit more taste of what it would be like if they were to try to do it as a pro, you know, go to a some of that stuff. But yeah, the forever grateful to BA for giving us that opportunity. We made some great contacts over there regarding China basketball, and I'm not sure if it's going to go ahead next year again, but hopefully it does, and hopefully Victoria's going again because it was unreal.
Yeah, cool experience. Like, there's a few of those kids that probably haven't spent a great deal amount of time at school this year when you put it into context of that trip, green and gold stuff, state team stuff along the way. Like, it's, you know, but this is the opportunity that a lot of these kids, you can't buy this.
Well, the other thing that was surprising is a lot of those kids over there, so even, the Shanghai Sharks Academy and all of that, they live in programs. Those kids, they live in there full time, you know. So they've got, they almost have like a center of excellence in each province, is the way it was explained to me. Now, I might not have got that 100% right, but they've got a lot more than just one, I guess, and it stands to reason with that many people.
Well, it probably speaks a little bit to what you were talking about a couple of weeks ago, Coops, where a lot of those kids that went to under 17 worlds go back to their academies, which are linked to pro teams, and you know, that's the world they live in now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I've seen it in Europe. I've seen it in China, you know, that this is you know, basically the best way to develop, and it's one of the reasons that, you know, those nations continue to have success. Yep.
Style of play, Bestie, was it something you expected? Was it something that was just completely different to what we would normally see here?
Look, the Utah prep were very, didn't run a lot, just got, like, they had isolation plays for their main guys. Yep. Switching defense, they switched almost everything, and it was 90% transition.
Yep.
You know, which is sort of, if you were to watch Team USA in the under-17 Worlds, right? Yep. They were just bigger, faster, stronger than most. Yep. The Serbian team was more half-court, ball screen, dominant, you know, little action into the action. They actually threw a lot of disruption, though, like a little bit of run and jump, a little bit what would be our 20 hit, some of that stuff. Surprisingly, they weren't great at playing against that stuff, which was a little odd.
It is bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've always had this phobia of, like, zoning teams that zone. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, surely they're working on that at practice and, you know, they'll see, like, a zone all the time and they'll know how to play. No, not often.
No, they coughed it up against pressure in the game against Shanghai Youth Academy, and I said to Wally, like, we need to, you know, go into a little bit of a press here, you know, and we did, and they threw it away, which was bizarre because they were doing that. Shanghai Sharks Youth, very similar to what, you know, I watched the CBA team play Brisbane after, you know, after the fact. A lot of similar, like a lot of stuff in that middle, I guess, middle third of the court with ball screen. Yep. You know, like it's sort of an NBA style, you know, whether it's like horns or a quick pistol action, you know, into a ball screen, a lot of shake ball screen type stuff, you know, which is what I've heard about the CBA anyway. The Chinese national team, a little bit more structured. They had a Serbian associate head coach there. So there was a Chinese, well, what I assume was Chinese head coach, then a Serbian associate head coach, and then about eight other assistant coaches. So they had a little bit more action into action. Like they had, you know, a bit of like a, some like weave and pin down action into ball screen. Like they move you around a little bit. And then Canada, a little similar to us, you know, they had some common actions, but they didn't have as much time together as us previously speaking to their coach. So I only saw the Japanese B League team on video when I was scouting the Chinese team because they were in the other pool, but they played very much like the Japanese national teams. Five out, spread you out, drive and kick, flare it, you know, lots of threes, you know, that. So I guess it kind of did stick true to, you know, how we see these continents sort of shaping out.
Yeah.
Which is kind of reassuring in a lot of ways too. Like you do want some continuity between your junior program and your senior programs. Mm. I mean, that's not just internationally. That's obviously at club level as we deal with here. But you do want to have some linkages between the two because otherwise you've got kids that are trying to learn completely different concepts or concepts that are going to be foreign to them by the time they get there. It's a hard, like, I mean, you just went through it, Coops. Like you were trying to weave in kids from all over Australia into one system which may not be familiar with them in a lot of cases. Like, that's got to be a hard task.
Yeah, 100%. It's, you know, it's the reason that, you know, we've had a national style play in the past, and some other countries have adopted it. And I definitely think that there's, you know, some balance to be had there around having some commonalities that the nation is conscious of and can use. And then obviously you don't want to go too far down that track to become, you know, too robotic and too scoutable and so on. So it's an interesting conversation to keep having and to try and find that best case scenario.
One without notice for both of you. We all have our ideas on how other teams play, as you sort of alluded to, Bestie. Because we're kind of in it, we may be a little bit closed off to what other countries would think of us. Like, what would other countries, do you think of what our style of play is? Like, would it be an obvious one, Coops, or would it be something that we're maybe not even aware of?
Some of the feedback that comes to us directly or through BA is a hard-nosed, tough defensive team. And one of the things that has been used also in the past is our mateship. And that, you know, the way that we've kind of struck fear into the heart of our opponents in the past has been through that mateship, that we, you know, we play for each other in a certain way, and we play hard, you know, for each other, and that we're willing to do a lot of things and sacrifice on the floor that maybe, you know, some other countries won't do. And, you know, if you look at past Boomers and Opals, I think that ties, you know, pretty closely into that. And then, you know, on the offensive side, you know, we do share the ball, you know, split kick extra. We've adopted that, you know, for a while now in terms of, you know, penetrate and kick and move it. And then I would say, just looking, and this probably is not feedback, but just something that's become pretty commonplace both in Australia, you know, and internationally, is the two-side, three-side motion. And I think, you know, most teams would pick up on that. That's a bit of a base of ours now.
Yep. What about you, Bestie?
Yeah, without sort of repeating what Coops had said, we had, you know, when we spoke to those guys from Utah Prep, they thought they were going to see us in the final. They thought we were going to knock off China, and, you know, we nearly did in China, which is, you know, amazing, yeah, right? Yeah. And it was because they said, you guys just execute. You know, when things got tough, we would go to that pinch game and we'd get a backup layup, or we'd get an open three or something, you know. So, yeah, that execution, you know. And I think if you look at the Boomers, that was a staple of it when it was Andre's sort of thing. And it's probably changed a little bit with the type of athletes we've now got, because we didn't really have those dynamic athletes that we had to play the beautiful game as such, you know.
But you also didn't get a lot of continuity either. Like, we're literally almost importing a team for the Boomers at the moment from other leagues around the world.
Correct.
In the Andre era, we had NBL guys that were regularly staples of, whether it be qualifying or the team that went away. It's just different. Like, it's not totally wrong, different. It's just different.
But yeah, I think on top of what Coops has said, it's the execution. It's the execution thing. But I'm interested to see how that changes as our athlete profile changes. Like I've said with the current Boomers, we've got all these amazing wings and athletes. You know, half court basketball is not necessarily what's best for them. We want to get out and fly around.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that's slowly becoming down the chain a little bit, I think. Yeah. So maybe in 10 years' time, opposition's observations of us might be different in that sense. But I hope we don't lose the first couple of things that Coop spoke about with hard-nosed D, play for each other, you know, Aussie.
Yeah, yeah. It is. It's funny because, I mean, obviously, any regular listeners to the podcast will know I'm fascinated by European basketball. Like, it's like how the Spanish play with, like, the flair and creativity. I love that sort of stuff. Starting to get more into the Serbian stuff now, where it's like, well, okay, what are they doing? They're clearly producing players and have done for a long time as well. But it is amazing how many other countries are genuinely curious about what we do here.
Yeah.
Because they look at it from the outside and it's like, you guys shouldn't compete with us. Like, you don't have, whether it be access or the numbers that other countries have, they look at Australian basketball and it's like, what are you doing that is giving you a chance at the next level, because we shouldn't be able to compete when you look at it from that angle.
Yeah, it's a great point, Rob. I remember a few years ago we had some visitors come out from Bayern Munich, you know, and you're talking about a big club, big European club, you know, obviously a little bit more football than basketball, but still, you know, one of the biggest clubs in Germany in both sports. And they came out here on a fact-finding. You know, they came out here and said, we want to spend time with you at Basel Victoria because we want to see what you guys are doing from an Australian perspective. And that's pretty cool, you know, when you think about it.
Yep, it is. I like how you brought football into it. you want to just give us the quick Sunderland update, Coops?
Yeah, 3-0, top of the table. Régis Labrie, the new manager, is outstanding. We lose Jack Clark to Ipswich, which was pretty, you know, devastating. But then Romain Mundell replaces him on the left wing and scores a goal to beat Burnley on the weekend, who are favourites to win the championship. I'm up and about.
Oh, going up?
Yeah.
Like, is this what we're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. You heard it here first.
Yeah, not even like playing games or anything like that. It's just straight up.
No, it's happening. Top two. Okay.
Yep. We are three games in. We love the manager. Now, anyone that knows anything about, you know, this club will know that could change quickly.
Yep.
They could have four more managers before the season ends.
Before the season ends, before we get Coos back on the pod. Yeah. Like, this can change so fast with you guys. But it's good to see you with a bit of a spring in your step, Coops. It's, I don't know how long it'll last for. I'm hopeful longer, but
ride the wave.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in for it. Hey, the actual topic we're going to talk about today is in-game coaching adjustments. So we are obviously in finals time for a lot of people out there. The VJBL competitions just hit finals. There are a lot of domestic competitions that are coming into finals. Big V, I think there's grand finals this weekend for the championship division. A lot of them have gone through it. So talking in-game adjustments, how much do you do tactically this time of year versus the skill development debate? Because that is one that comes out a lot, is that, oh, we're just going to reduce your load at our training sessions and we're just going to do walkthrough things so that we can keep you all fresh and healthy. But is that still conducive to performing in a game situation, Coops? Like, how do you find the balance, I suppose, between not throwing everything out that you've done to get you to this point and getting everything in that you need to move forward with?
Yeah, still got to find the right balance in terms of making sure your athletes are feeling comfortable from an individual standpoint. You know, are they getting, you know, the right amount of shots? Are they getting the ball in their hands in their concepts? So are they working on their individual skill development within what you're trying to do from a structure standpoint? So you don't want to move away from that completely. You still want to make sure that you're providing a comfort level. But then this is definitely the time where, you know, you really put the development aside and it's all about performance. Yeah, this is the time where winning matters, and you can move into that mindset and that, again, that structure of how to practice, how to prepare.
Yeah, Bestie, you were just in this situation, sans the trip to China. But you were coming into finals. Did you, like, was this something that you planned out at the very start of the season as to, like, what sort of cycles you'd be in to when you need to perform, when do you develop? Like, is this something you planned out then?
Well, it's obviously a little bit different for youth league, so you're always trying to develop. And I think if you're not thinking that way, you probably shouldn't be coaching youth league. But the back end of the season, you need to think tactically, and winning matters. I would say you need to weigh up if you are going to make a change tactically that requires some skill that you might not have within your group. You need to weigh up whether you can effectively do that in the window that you have, right? So it might be, well, what can I think about? You know, maybe it's pick and roll coverage. Let's talk about that, because you guys know how important that is to me.
Yep.
I've rattled off my list before, but let's say we need a second coverage. Our primary coverage has been drops, right? But we need a second coverage, and I think we need to blitz it. And you've got some bigs that haven't done that before. Maybe they're not mobile enough at this point. Are you going to be able to get them to do that in 2 weeks? So you've got to be realistic with the development of that versus being able to, you know, win. So maybe it needs to become a different coverage. You know, maybe you need to say, well, we're gonna ice it, or we're gonna switch it, or we're gonna try and, you know, pre-switch it, or whatever it might be. Or, sorry, dude, you're not playing. Like, whatever it might be, right?
Yeah.
But I think if it's something you can do quickly, like maybe if the team you're gonna play, you know, they trap a lot, and it can be some more stuff around decision making of your guards, or, you know, what shortening the pass as your receiver, maybe tactically and development-wise, you can get that done in a short period of time. But you've got to know your team, I guess, and you've got to figure out what can I get done in 1 week or 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And not easy to do, obviously, because, you know, is, say, blitzing the on-ball as an argument going to be good enough? Maybe. Will it be good? Probably not. So you got to try and pick your moments as well. Like, when do I want to use this? Is this up the sleeve for last possession of the game? Opposition has side out of bounds. I know they're going to put their best player in pick and roll. I know we would usually drop that, but we're going to blitz this one possession, in which case you might have the opportunity to do it. But you know, do you want to live and die by that for the whole season?
Sub.
Yeah, maybe not. Yeah. Well, you may have to. Say,
yeah.
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 That's kind of the reality.
I think importantly too, to drill down on a little bit for our coaches, is when you're talking about that short window, but why something like changing from a drops to a blitz is so important to have this thought process that you guys are talking about, is you're talking about having a big that's used to being well and truly off, off the screen defender. So now you're moving them from this zoned off drops coverage right up to being attached to the level of the screener and doing something completely different. Whereas if you maybe were already switching where that player was attached to the screener and now you're changing to a blitz, that's a much smaller adjustment, than changing a big coverage like that. And that has to be a part of, you know, what you're thinking about.
Well, they had to have heard of this before too. You can't just roll into a game and just expect them to be able to pick stuff up on the fly and see what it is. Like I was watching the Vic Metro and Vic Country girls train on Sunday when they had their All-State session. And one of Zoe's instructions in the scrimmages was, we're switching 1 through 4 5s are staying attached. Something that a lot of the older kids, I would hope, have heard before. Does that make sense to everyone? And you saw a couple of heads go, yep, got it. You saw a couple that were just like, I don't really know, but I'm just going to keep my head where it is so it doesn't look like I don't know. And then one girl that just straight up went, nope, nothing. Like, I have no idea what you're talking about whatsoever. And there was almost fear in her eyes, but credit to her for sitting there saying, no, I don't.
Yeah,
like, I don't get it. Like, so if you're a player in that situation and a coach is in a timeout and says, hey, we're going to blitz this on-ball screen, best he might have touched on it at training or whatever the case may be, but the kid turns around and says, hey, I'm not comfortable with this, say something. Like, as a player, you got to say something, because the coach can then make the decision with, okay, do I go and explain it a little bit further to you, or do I make the personnel change, as you're talking about, Bessie, and say, well, okay, if you don't get it, no problems. Credit to you for saying something. We'll make a change on this. Because the first time they hear it can't be the game.
Yeah, I think I mentioned earlier that in the past I've had a player that if he was on the group that was on the floor and I pulled my whiteboard out in a timeout, quarter time, whatever, and I drew up something, but then if I maybe decided I wanted to change the starting point, that I knew that, Coops, you're in the left corner. Actually, sorry, I want you in the right corner. I knew for that particular player he was now done, and I either needed to put him back in that corner or actually you're out.
Yep.
It's
valid. So I suppose my next part of this question then is, how much whiteboard coaching would you do at your training sessions? Like throughout the year and also this time of year, Bestie, like, is that something that you practice at your training sessions?
Yeah, it is. Most practices.
Yep.
And I know for a fact that some of my players that are not in the group being called over for the whiteboarding probably get a little annoyed, because it's like, Blue, you're over here. Come over here. Let's try this play. Blue, come back. Now, Blue's on offense again. Yeah. Let's go again.
But then that's obviously a teaching. It's a skill in itself.
Yeah.
You have to be able to do it. So would that be out of a baseline sideline, or would that be like a half-court set?
Yeah, anything. Okay. Bit of random, to be honest.
And would it necessarily be something that you run or use, or would this just be I've seen this, I'm trying to work out, can I use this in this situation, or would it be just made up or part of your system?
It's more an eye for the future, you know. So in league play, you always had to have some new things the second time you played some teams. So I would always have a few options on the back of the session plan, drew up in fast draw so my ACs could look at it, and then I would call them over and try one of them, see how it went, and then that would, you know, you kind of look across at your ACs and they'd be like, oh yeah, that's that kind of works or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah. That's how I would do it. Yeah.
You strike me as a big whiteboard person.
Yep, love the whiteboard.
Yep.
And in our I think it was our second camp preparing for Worlds, we had winning time. So that was a great recommendation by Ash. And so we would drop in, you know, 1 to 5 minute segments throughout the session plan. And we had both end line, sideline, and half court actions. And really not only use that to, you know, further build the skill of reading the whiteboard and being able to execute, but it was also for a way for us to kind of do similar to what Bessie was talking about, which was to establish which end line, sideline, you know, late clock actions we liked and that worked for the group. And we kind of went through it. We're like, yeah, we like that. We got a good shot. Nah, guys didn't understand it. Cross it off. And yeah, it ended up being, yeah, really helpful way of doing things and something I would do again. Something else I've been experimenting with is what I'm calling film to floor. And so obviously based on resources, we had our top 30 camp last weekend. And, you know, we're able to have the big screen TV right next to the court and show like maximum one or two clips. This is what it looks like. Now let's go out onto the floor. And we made an adjustment to our early motion. So one of the clips I had was the fast draw up on the screen because we didn't have footage of it, but it was enough to be like, hey, this is what it looks like from a diagram perspective. Now let's go out and do it. So I think there's real value in it.
Yeah, it's something actually I saw Zoe do like maybe 8 or 9 years ago. She filmed some stuff at her training session and she'd have the iPad sitting on the bench. So rather than diagramming it necessarily on a whiteboard, she'd pull up the clip and say, this is what we're running out of this timeout. And it was really interesting seeing some kids really embrace that. And it's like, okay, that makes sense because one, I know I've gone through it before, so I feel a little bit more confident as I'm about to do it. But other kids are just like, this freaks me out. Like I'm now watching something that doesn't quite align with what I'm used to because I'm used to a whiteboard. So it's something I think you've got to practice. But I think for you as a coach too, that's also your opportunity to practice. No one wants to get in those last couple of minutes of a game, have to diagram something. They haven't diagrammed all year. You've got to get practice at this as well as a coach. And that's such a... Well, we just don't get to do it often.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that drives me mental is seeing coaches do O's for defense and X for offense every time I see it. It's like nails on a chalkboard. I'm like, what are you doing? But yeah, you do. You do need practice in it. You know, you need to be able to work through, you know, are you starting from the very start? You know, are you using magnets? You know, are you... You know, what sort of lines are you using? Like all those sorts of things matter in how you're executing off the whiteboard. I think the other part too, just going back to the start of the question too, Rob, is you've got to have understanding of your expectations on the whiteboard too. So you should know your group pretty well, especially by this point of the season. And if you need to go to a sight unseen play on the whiteboard, your expectations should move dependent on the group. So it's like, man, we have to run this different action or this sideline out of bounds play, but I know I've got a younger group that hasn't been great off the whiteboard. So as much as I have to run it, I still, you know, my expectations do need to come down a little bit on how they're going to execute it.
Yep. You touched on it before, Bestie. You're going to see teams that you've seen already during the season and you're going to have to make adjustments. Like, is that as simple as just like changing the geography of where something is, or is that like a whole new set? Is that just a wrinkle within something you already do? Is that changing personnel? What do you adjust in your world?
We would always just have counters.
Yep. So you just go a little further down.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And we actually, in the quarterfinal, I guess that's what it was called, against Eltham, we'd been running the same play at the start of the game for a few games, and it was typically a split down into a back cut and a gate for the back cutter to come up for the three, and it was Ben Waller, right? And we sort of figured that they would scout it, and it was actually the first play as it started to happen, the guy that was guarding it actually was yelling, "Here it comes, here it comes, here it comes," right? And then we just scored on the counter and it was just like, there it goes. Do you know what I mean? And like that's what we're talking about, right? So that's why I think having it kind of start the same is beneficial because it almost lulled them into this false sense of security. Like we know what's coming. Whereas if it's a totally different alignment, then potentially more heightened. I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking too much about it. But that was a real life example of like exactly where it worked.
Yes and no though, because like I know coaching against Melbourne Tigers teams a lot. Like it's usually the same alignment, the same types of cuts, and you can get complacent with it.
Yeah.
Like it's the amount of times I got scored on off a shuffle cut in the fourth quarter and it's like, why now? Like
that was us in the first final. Yeah, we were up 17, I think, and defending it well because we had this real urgency about it. And then slowly it was like back up.
Yep.
Slowly like back up, overplay three.
Yep. It's crazy how often it happens. Like I know coaching a lot of like junior teams in particular, when there's a good Melbourne Tigers group, and then like part of me wants to put in a little bit of sort of third option. Just so where kids get used to seeing what it is, what the counters are, because it also does open up a lot of opportunities for you. Like you don't want the full shuffle system in some cases, but by just having a couple of wrinkles in there can just be enough. And it is something where you don't have to just reinvent your entire offense. It's just like, hey, actually, instead of that being a down screen, we're now going to back screen it. And that can be enough just to throw people out. And I know at the senior level, when you come across coaches that you know put a lot of time into their scout and they're almost like proud of their scout, like it's their newborn child as to what it looks like. It's like, well, okay, we're going to do some stuff that you probably haven't seen before. Like if we know that you're going to put all this time into the scout, we'll roll something out that we haven't used before and just watch the chaos unfold down the other end as the head coach goes, the assistant coaches, what's that? That wasn't on the scout. And this is, I haven't seen it before. Like it's where's this come from? Like there's times to do that. And that can be just change the geography of it. Like instead of starting it in the middle of the forward, start it on the wing and still get through the same stuff you want to get through. You just change where it comes from. So it's especially in junior basketball, that can be enough to freak some kids out where they're like, whoa, this is not the same thing. It's like, no, same thing, just a different area. Like that's enough at times. So
we would, you know, we would have some stuff that we were working on, and in games, my players would come to me and go, oh, can we do this? And I'd be like, no.
Like tuck it away.
Yeah, we are waiting until next, you know, like the next round or whatever. But we'd start to have like sort of litter it in, or you know, sprinkle it in, maybe. Yeah,
Coops, how much would you change your plan for the opposition versus make them adjust to you? Like, so I'm not just talking personnel. This might be style of play. Like, I know you're an up and down coach. Like, you want to get after it and those types of things. But you play a team that you might feel like is better at that. Would you try and slow them down, or would you say, no, we're going to try and rise to that level?
Yeah, obviously, you know, we can preface everything in this conversation with it depends, but again, it comes down to your group a little bit of knowing how much we can step away from our identity but then still come back to it when we need it. So I'm big on if we are going to try different things, we probably try it earlier in the game. We probably see, you know, what we can get away with, you know, taking away different things or being a little bit different, knowing that we've established a really good identity that as the game progresses and the opposition gets a little bit more tired and all those sorts of caveats come into it, that we can go back to that and still probably have some success, you know, late in it. I do like scouting and, you know, creating ideas with the staff and with the athletes in that collaborative environment of what we can take away to be disruptive and do some different things. Again, it's just understanding how far down the line we can go. So, yeah, I mean, we've, like, obviously Bessie and I have coached together a lot now, and we'll do some things, you know, we'll watch some film and put our heads together and say, hey, look, yeah, like we could, you know, jump switch this action and, you know, maybe get a couple of cheap steals and, but then, you know that later on, you know, they're going to pick it apart. So, you know, we'll just go back to whatever we're doing. So, yeah, I know that's a little bit of a roundabout answer, but yeah, it's exciting to have the group that you can have some fun with and get out there and really get involved in the scout and get a little bit funky with it. But again, you know, that's always going to be a better group that has really established who they are and is going to have success playing that way.
I've actually got a pretty cool story, so hit the button.
Oh, yes.
Here we go. It's been a while.
This was last year. We had a like a stagger away sort of set, I guess, or wrinkle. And we had planned it out of a timeout. It was going to be for Bolton. He was going to – so it was a stagger into a handoff on his side, basically. And he was going to take one step towards the ball, go back up, try and get a dunk, right? And it's literally right in front of my – like the bench as it's happening. And I'm talking to Ethan as the ball's like being walked down the court and to his defender saying, don't let him deny you this catch. You've got to get this catch. Don't let him deny you get this catch. And the kid just jumps out to try and deny it. Like, and back cut it, Ethan just crushes it on the rim. It was great. So a little bit of that too, you know, as the coach. Yeah.
Yes.
Similar story. I did that once with one of my teams. The problem is that Ben Simmons was the defender. Yeah, and it didn't end up with us scoring. It ended up with a breakout dunk. I still joke about it in a lot of coaching courses. Like, you can go back to like the first Ben Simmons mixtapes and you can see me in the corner in like a red jacket just with my hands on my head going, what have I done?
Look at this.
Yeah, it's not a great look as it turns out. But that's part of the byplay of it.
It is.
Like, this is the fun stuff that you get to talk about a little bit. Like, curious for both of you, if you were to, would you ever change your lineup? Like, if I'm assuming both of you were, hey, this is my starting group and it stays fairly consistent, would you ever change for the other team? Would you make them change to you, bestie?
We did it this year.
Yep.
We changed.
Do you worry about like the psychology behind that?
It depends on who it is.
Yeah, gotcha.
Depends on who it is. And we, I had the pre-talk with the kid.
Yep.
Basically, how do I say this without naming a lot of names? They had a big that was heavy drops.
Yep.
And our big was not a three-point threat. So we went to a pick-and-pop guy, and I think in the first quarter he had four made threes.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it blew the game open.
Yep.
And we said, like, don't roll, just pop. And it was throwback three, throwback three, throwback three.
Yep.
So, and then when the backup big came on, we then went back to the other guy, and he actually had his best game because he beat up against, you know, a better matchup for him.
That makes sense. What about you, Coops?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, willing to change it as much as necessary. It just must come out of strong relationships with your athletes, strong team culture that allows you to or allows the team to know that it could happen, and, you know, you need to be ready that if you're going to, you know, move up into the starting lineup, or you need to be ready if you're going back to the bench and going to be first or second rotation. But, yeah, just to kind of double-click on what Bestie was talking about in terms of that pre-chat, like that's the key. That's the key is getting out in front of it, you know, sitting down with that athlete, explaining why you're doing it, making sure that you – keep them full of confidence in terms of how they're going to be utilized in that game, and then it shouldn't be an issue, and we should be able to use, you know, changing lineups to impact the game. That's one of the things that we can do from the sidelines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, without a doubt. How do you go about breaking momentum in games? Like, I'm sure we've all been in those situations where it's just like, hey, we feel like we're going okay, then all of a sudden you sort of feel the points piling on. You might have called the timeout, you might have tried to change subs, and just nothing is working. What would you go to next, Coops?
Yeah, that's where I start on the offensive side of the ball. That's where I have on my strategy card certain walk-up sets, certain like particular actions that I know are going to be, you know, probably that little bit more impactful. But again, things we haven't practiced as much. I'll give you an example. Should we use a story time button?
It would be remiss of us.
I know, right? We played Germany in our pool game, and we were down, I think down 12 or down 15 at one stage, and they were playing, you know, really good basketball. And it was, we got to that point, it was like, you know, their denial, their pressure, their size was hurting us. Our secondary motion wasn't quite getting the job done. And out of, I think it was half time, we went to a horn set. We called it Horn's Exit, and where we used a shallow exit cut underneath the pick and seam pick and roll, and then we emptied out one of the corners to open up. And yeah, we ran that a couple of times, and yeah, like basically worked every time. We got, you know, roller was wide open. We threw back. We were able to get downhill. It really impacted the game from the offensive side of the ball. And we went on to win that game by 14. So it was a great turnaround. The kids and the coaches were outstanding. We played Canada the next game in our last pool game. I think we were down 5. Again, the game felt like it was getting away from us. And I yelled out to the group from the sideline. Yeah, I didn't really want to use a timeout at the time. And said, horns exit, horns exit. And two of them turned around and said, we don't know it. So it was like,
I'll grab that timeout now.
Yeah, I was like, okay, all right. Yeah, plan B. Do we use the timeout? You know, what do we do? And we spoke about using one of our secondary motion counters that they were more familiar with. And we used horns exit out of one of the breaks, which was good, but it was really interesting, in that dynamic. But that's a big one for me in having something up my sleeve offensively that I know is, again, could be a different alignment, could be something different the opposition hasn't seen before, but I know is going to get us a good look.
Yep. What about you, Bestie? How do you try and break momentum in games?
Yeah, well, if it's not through timeouts or subs, it's play calls and maybe even a defensive call.
Yep.
As well, yeah.
Funny you've both gone to offense, because in my mind I went straight away to defense.
Yeah, we've had a defense the last few years that has been really constricting to the other teams, and I think one of the games I was away, Mihai, I think they were playing Keilor. I think they got down 17 in the first quarter, went to that defense, and by the end of the first quarter were up 14.
If you're going to say it's a 1-3-1 zone, shout out to Dylan Cole. Because we spoke about it after that and wasn't it overly
was
thrilled.
A 1-3-1 zone.
But that's the sort of stuff that you can do.
Yeah.
You have to try something, especially early on in the game. Like if you get down early, I'll lose by 80. Who cares? Like try some things to try and bring it back.
We'd
in
worked
if
on
you
that.
Can.
Yeah, we'd worked on it. Yeah.
Yeah, without a doubt. But again, Dylan was a touch saltier when I spoke to him about it, but it's kind of the ebbs and the flows.
He might be a little worse after he listens to this.
He may not be thrilled by it, as it turns out. Big fan of the book club, as it turns out. Already gone and bought the book from last week.
Good, aren't he?
Looking for some affiliate links.
He's lent me his Daily Dad edition too, which I've added to my morning ritual. So that's excellent. That's been nice.
Good job, Dylan. So how many different coverages would you try then before it's just like, hey, this is just, we're now right getting right to the bottom of it. What would they be? Like if it's a, I'll throw an example out for both of you. If it's a quick point guard that is just tearing you apart, that you can't trap in the half court, that is just like a buzzsaw getting to the basket, what options have you got? What would you go to first, Coops, to try and take him out of his rhythm?
From a ball screen coverage or more in general?
Just in general. Just the foot matchup.
Can he shoot?
We'll say sporadic. Okay. Just to play the depends card.
Yeah, I would start with more of the base offense and talk a little bit about gapping and catting and mouse the ball. So not necessarily like up and in and being able to give up a split, potentially 80, 70 feet from the rim. So we talk to the 1v1 defender about, okay, we've got to give them a step. But again, that cat and mouse game, in small, back big, trying to put them in two minds. So really working that matchup. Talk to the guys off the ball about loading to the ball more. So, like, really, accentuating getting into the ball and taking away space again, because, if this guy's being such a problem, him giving it up to somebody else, that's immediately a win. So, and again, letting the athletes know that if he passes the ball to your man, that's a win for us, and then we can problem solve after that. So that would be kind of the first thing that we would discuss, because it ties into our base man-to-man system, so we don't have to get too tricky with it. If we were talking about a ball screen coverage, depending on the group, if it was 1-5 pick and roll and we had a really athletic, post, I would talk about switching, again, just trying to keep a body between ball and basket, having an aggressive switching angle so that guy's not coming downhill. At least his first dribble off that pick and roll is, lateral, if not negative. Again, then we can load up off the ball. would talk to the guys about using a soft hit out of that that switch, and we had a couple of examples with that away with the Crocs guys. I remember I think we were playing France, and Henry had to switch out on one of the dynamic French guards, and Harry Beecham came running over, you know, screamed out hit, you know, which allowed the ball moved because the guard saw the trap coming, and that allowed Henry to sprint back, and we obviously got into better matchup. So that was really positive and effective. So not going too far down the line, because obviously we can go on and on, but that would be my starting strategy.
Mm. Yep. If you've got a player that is like a long wing, you should try to develop them getting used to guarding some smaller guards through practice, because just length can be something that they haven't always seen, because a lot of coaches will try to match speed with speed. And you've got to defend differently when you're defending with length versus smaller guard. So you need to have spent time on that. So that would be if I had done that in the past, that would be something I would try. Just use your length, like gap them a little bit more, that type of stuff, first of all. Then second of all, if anyone watched or goes back and watches that bronze medal game in China against Canada, we had this exact problem. They had a little zippy guard. They were playing off the step up, sort of seam ball screen. He was getting downhill on his left hand, and it was just hurting us. He was getting at the rim, you know, and I actually said it in one of the timeouts, like, I can't believe this guy is killing us. This is the adjustment we're going to make. So the first thing was, we didn't feel he was looking for the roller. We thought he was probably too little to throw it back opposite without it being loopy. So we told the post, just stay in line with it. We had the nail tag the roller because we were confident that we could deal with the throwback if it happened. And then we actually had the guy in the corner like really open up a little bit more towards the ball and like dig at it with the inside hand. And he went from, I feel like he'd scored maybe three times out of like maybe five possessions to ending the game with 8 points. Yep. You know, so that was that exact situation. Mm-hmm. He was quick. And we're like, look, he's not throwing it to the roller. We're going to crash it on the roller anyway. You know, let's help a little bit more from the corner and then just stay in line with it. No layup rule. Yep. And, obviously the end result was there.
Yep. Yeah. So you imagine your team's going well. Other team calls a timeout. What would you be expecting is coming out of the other end? I can see both of your eyes light up at the same time because it starts with Z and rhymes with bone. What would you be talking to your kids about in that type of situation, Bestie? Like, how would you prepare them for that? Because it's probably going to be press or zone. And there are some coaches where you know, hey, these are the two change-ups and there won't be anything different.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of always talk about just be ready for pressure and reiterate to the group that they've called a timeout. They've got to change the game. So don't expect it to be the same. And then I've changed a little bit to have some stuff that you can run against man or zone. Yep. So then I'm like, let's just go with that.
Yeah, really like that.
Regardless. Yep. Because it's, you know, sometimes difficult to be like, well, if they're in this, run this. If they're in that, let's run this. So I've probably taken that out of their hands a little bit more recently to just say, well, doesn't matter. We're in this man or zone. And then, yeah, I think, you know, more recently, once again, going back to China, some of the timeout calls were just bizarre. Like, we had two teams call a timeout like 30 seconds before the media window for the timeout. And I just looked at Grant and said, that's a gift.
Yeah.
You know? And then it's just, they've come out and they've been exactly the same.
Yep.
So
you got to expect a change.
There was no change.
And that's the thing. You would normally expect a change in that sort of situation.
There was a lot of yelling.
Yeah, well, that's fairly consistent. But, I mean, your point is valid, though, of expect a change and expect pressure. Like, they're the two things that you would immediately sort of assume is going to come because, look, timeouts happen because they're unhappy with something. they're going to have to look to change something tactically, which is usually, can we be more assertive? Can we take the ease off the other team?
And that's normally what I start with. Fellas, there is a reason they're calling this. They have to change something. Let's not get caught not lining up in our press breaker. Let's, you know, get to that. Let's not run away from the ball if there's a trap. Let's come to it. Let's shorten passes. I sort of start that before then I go into, right, now let's run whatever it might be. Bingo, Bravo, Delta.
Yep.
Right, whatever it might be.
Wow. Well, I feel like it's just called in an airstrike somewhere.
Yeah.
What about you, Coops?
Well, I'm now just thinking about what play I can have to call it Bingo, Bravo, Delta, because that's possibly the best play call name I've ever heard.
I just told you, it's the back cut for the dunk. Yeah.
yeah, it's exactly the same. You know, but one of the things, you know, again, just drawing on my recent coaching experiences, but also the Olympics, and we've actually had a chat about it here in our system and our style, and is starting to have some more non-negotiables around dealing with pressure, and in particular some terror screens in the backcourt. So switching sides, we call it a smash screen, going downhill, a punch screen. You know, obviously people have different names for it, but on the back of exactly what Bessie was saying, you know, let's make sure we're in our press breaker, let's make sure, you know, we're running our action, like our zone action, you know, with the Crocs came out of our wedge stuff. So if they changed mid-possession, it wasn't going to matter. But that was a big one for me, kind of looking to the future is, hey, you know, press break to this action, but post, let's be really engaged for smashes and for punches, you know, to potentially loosen up some of that early pressure in the backcourt.
Yeah, absolutely. So how long would you stay with something that's working? Like, is there an element of sort of cat and mouse a little bit as well? Like, if something's working, I'm not going to go away from it? Or
forever.
Is it forever. Yeah. Like, it's, because I'm thinking about it from, say, a press situation. Like, you might press a team early and you get up, say, 10, 12 points. Would there be a time where it's like, hey, this has worked well, but I'm going to take this away now before the other team can get used to it and then bring it back later when they're not anticipating it?
Probably need some clarity around what level are we playing and, like, what game is it? Is it a tournament? Is it a, you know?
End of season, similar to what we're dealing with VJBL. So call it junior basketball finals time.
Grand final?
No.
And with the working, how much are we up by?
10, 12, somewhere in there. So call it 11 and split the difference.
Nah, not out of it yet.
Yep.
Up a little bit more, maybe 17, 18.
Yep.
Then put it away.
Yep.
I think to save for later and then maybe for the next game if we make it.
Yeah, yeah. I like that from a comfort standpoint, you know, in building a lead that says, hey, I've got some wiggle room now. I can, you know, look at, you know, maybe managing my rotations, best players, we can save a few minutes because we've built that lead.
Yep.
Also with that, you know, getting used to it, I'd wanna be seeing, you know, the opposition coach and the athletes in what does that look like? You know what I mean? I'm not just gonna pull the thing because, you know, I'm worried about them potentially figuring it out. Like, I'd want to see some, oh, okay, that...
Clear plan.
Yeah, clear plan. Oh, they've found this middle release or a lag pass or something. So maybe they haven't scored just yet, but they're kind of figuring it out. So then that would trigger me to be like, okay, let's get out of it. But if the thing's working, I want to put my foot on the throat of the team.
Yeah, and if it's offense... You just keep going until they adjust.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I'm more inclined to stay with something offensively than I am defensively.
Mm. Definitely.
Like 100%. I don't know why. Like, it's just kind of how it lines up.
It's something I've, you know, the last couple of years, just even doing youth league, you know, we run a play and score it. I'm like, go back to it.
Yeah.
Go back to it. Yep. Go back to it. Go back to it. Now we're playing counters.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, like that. And that is, and I've said to them, that's senior basketball. Like, it's not this equal opportunity, you haven't had a shot, so now we're going to run something for you. It's like, no, this is working, we keep doing it.
That's right. And I go back to that slapping glass pot episode with the head coach of the Orlando Magic G League team talking about ball screens and the value of the ball screen for them, but importantly, his quote on, for them, it's quantity over quality. And they want to run a minimum of, you know, 6 ball screens a possession, because they only have to get one right and the defense has to get all six right. And if you're thinking about that, you know, in terms of what we're talking about, just going to the thing that's working, that's, you know, continually just making it hard for the defense over and over and over again. Yeah, that's how you control the game.
Yep. I love it. Six.
There's a buck coming.
Six.
Yeah, four. I think it was 4-6. Yeah.
Okay, four I could get. Six. Yeah. Man,
that's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Long shot clock, though.
No, it's not.
24.
24. Oh, they're at 24.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. G League.
Oh,
yeah.
G League. Sorry, G-League, I thought you said college.
Yeah.
So, and I think from his standpoint, yeah, I don't want to talk for the coach, but I think the idea is that probably by the time they're hitting the third or the fourth, they're starting to get something out of it. Because you think about, you know, and multiple we've...
disadvantages.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
For sure.
And shows that the ball screen isn't going anywhere and how important it is for us to be good at defending it and be good at utilizing it. But, yeah, it's just an interesting one because I think it ties into that around staying in something that you feel like you're really good at,
yep,
and that's always going to be able to create an advantage for your offense.
Congratulations. You've been drafted by the Orlando Magic G League team as a 6'11 5-man.
Yeah.
It's like, better be ready to be on the long run.
Yeah.
You'll be sprinting into a lot of actions.
That's
like it's,
right. Run the hills in preseason. Yeah. You need it.
Maybe constantly like, stop short rolling.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, well, I know I've got to come back.
Well, and just imagine how many fives you'd need on your roster. Because it's like, I know at least three of them are going to foul out every game on moving picks. So yeah. Like, you just need a little bit of security down there. Hey, what about trends of opposition coaches? Like, what sort of trends would you be looking for from an opposition coach that's like, geez, I think I can attack that next time we see it coming?
Yeah, one of the things we did each year was I would have my assistant coaches straight away research who is a returning coach for the opposition.
Yep.
So we had a document. It was a Google document that we had. It was like our whole season, basically everything was in there. But that was one of the tabs on there was, who's coaching? Are they returning? If they are returning, great. We've got some data on some trends, maybe, you know. And then if they are a new coach, where did they coach last? Can we find some stuff on them? Do they have some of that? So because coaches don't change that much from 1 year to year. They might change a little bit, but typically, you know, some coaches, and me the same,
yeah,
you know, so yep, we would do that. We would do that, I guess, pre-work from that. So we would know,
yep,
a minimum, were they returning? What did we notice from them last year? We would often look at the review game from them before we started our scout for the that current year.
So that'd be sort of things like what their rotations look like. Yeah. Are they quick on the trigger on a timeout?
Yep,
like
all of that.
What the changes are coming out of timeouts?
A lot of coaches, they like a 2-3 zone on an end out. You know, that typically they don't have crazy momentum shifts.
Yep.
Some do, some don't, but we're talking, I don't know what it was there, 20 teams in youth league. You know, you'd want to say that if there was all 20 coaches returned, you would say that at least 15 of them wouldn't have dramatic change.
Yep. What about you, Coops?
Story time, Rob.
Ooh.
Is this three?
Yeah, man, this is unheard of.
Yeah, I'm kind of upset that I hadn't been using it in the last couple of episodes when I was talking about it. Yeah, so I think we're in catch-up mode now. No, is it? Shout out to Luke Cann and Ash Arnott. You know, it's my assistants while we're away. They just did an absolutely outstanding job of preparing me and preparing the team for the opposition. But a great example is we played Egypt in our Four Nations game, and man, Egypt, God, could just shoot the basketball. Like, that's an exciting basketball nation coming forward. But I think we end up winning the game by two. They had the ball sideline out of bounds, you know, under 10 seconds to go, ran a play, got a three, missed, we won. They went on to obviously play some other Four Nations game, and then we played them in our first pool game of the tournament. And again, another tight game. They shot the ball like crazy, and you know, in the scout process and the game planning, you know, Ash had said, "Hey, look, you know, he's used this play in the after us. Like, this is his go-to play. You can see it. So if we're in a similar situation, this is the play he's going to run." And we're up three, 9 seconds to go, called a timeout, advanced it. And I looked at Ash and I said, is he going to run it? He's like, yep. And I handed him the whiteboard. I said, okay, you know, go show the guys how to defend it. And Ash had his plan ready to go, and we ended up getting the stop and winning. But that was just a really good example of that opposition, you know, scout, coach scout. And that was one of his trends that we're able to pick up on and utilize to help our performance.
Yeah, really like it. And it is a vital part of it. Like, you know, there are some coaches that will call timeouts to break momentum, that will say, hey, when things are getting a bit dicey, I'm just going to go small ball and throw all the guards out there and try and disrupt you that way. I'll play my two bigs at the same time. Those types of things are really key moments. And similar to what you're talking about, like, we've all got trends. Mm. Like, whether we are aware of them or not as coaches, sometimes we aren't aware of what we do, but others might be aware. So if you've got that opportunity where you've got someone that's watched a lot of your games during the season, get some feedback from them. Ask them, hey, what do I do well that you would scout if you were me or coming up against me, and find out what it is, because, you know, obviously different coaches will want different things, and different coaches see different things out of it. You might just not be aware of it.
A lot of coaches do it with rotation, like, oh, you know, I've got to get this guy back in.
Halfway through the second, or I know that sub's coming.
Yeah, or whatever it is. You know, we were talking just the other, last week, I think. I had a player, I think we're playing Diamond Valley, going into, there was 1 minute to go in the third quarter. He hadn't played. I put him in. Played 11 minutes.
Yep. Didn't see that one coming?
I did not see that coming. Like, put him in. It was more just to spell someone.
Yep.
Game was sort of close. You know, I'm like, I'm going to need these guys down the stretch, whatever. Put him in that minute. I think we as a team, or maybe like plus three. So like, we've got a little bit of time here. And then it was like, man, I'm not taking this guy off. You know, he's impacting winning, you know. So on the other side of it, it's important to perhaps not be so robust with some of that stuff.
Mm.
Yep.
Yeah.
You got to coach what's in front of you.
Honestly. Yeah. Like,
you can have a plan. Like, and I agree with what you're talking about earlier, Coots, when you're talking about like your note cards and those sorts of things. Would they change every game, or would they be fairly consistent throughout the season?
Stays pretty consistent.
Yep.
The scout notes would change. So I'd have some key things there, you know, watch out for 2-3, whatever. Out of a timeout, whatever it may be, that sort of thing. We would sometimes change a counter, like what Bessie was talking about, that we know we're coming up against, you know, whoever, and they defend this a certain way, so let's put that counter in and shoot around. So that would go on there. But outside of that, it's pretty rigid.
No, excellent. That wraps us up. So, coaches, thanks very much for listening. Thank you both for jumping in as well. Good luck with everyone playing finals this week, and hope it goes well for everyone. And we might be back next week to try and get you over the line on that one if it does play out really well for you all. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll catch you all next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.